Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Death Notices. Rosa Trujillo de Marquez, Odessa. Rosa Trujillo de Marquez, 80, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 9th, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Friday, October 22nd, 2021, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will take place at a later date in Chihuahua, Mexico. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Anthony M. Prieto, Odessa. Anthony M. Prieto, 58, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 9th, 2021, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, October 22nd, 2021, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Transitory Inflation, Dennis Elam. According to the Energy Information Administration, nearly half of U.S. households that warm their homes with mainly natural gas can expect to spend an average of 30% more on their bills compared with last year. Brent and WTIC have both increased over 60% this year. A winter of giant gas bills is coming, Thursday's WSJ. Since mid-2020, natural gas prices have soared from under $2 to near $6 MBTU. Gee, this going green is really getting expensive. There are several reasons. In burst of we are green mood, backup coal-fired plants were closed around the world, and over-reliance on solar and wind failed as wind slowed in Great Britain. Team Biden has been on the regulation warpath against conventional energy since Inauguration Day. This discourages new exploration. And bingo, here we are with gasoline prices at $3 to $5. Crude oil is both a commodity, useful, and an opportunity for financial speculation. So prices may well go triple digit again. We learned yesterday that the annualized producer price index is up 89.28% from a year ago. Fed Chair Powell's forecast of transitory inflation is not holding up well. President Biden delights in blaming others for problems. It seems a safe bet he will hang the inflation number on Powell and appoint a new Fed chair. And besides, Trump appointed him, so like Keystone Pipeline, reason enough to cancel. There is always a mix of social mood, and it unfolds in fractal form, higher and lower levels. But overall mood is wildly positive. Here are some examples. 1. The stock market is 35 times its high of 1966. 2. Entire sections of the WSJ are devoted to lauding the most successful wealth advisors. 3. The real estate mansion section of the WSJ is a fat 14 pages long. The latest wrinkle is not a second home, but a couple that has two primary residences in Idaho and Virginia. 4. People are quitting jobs in record numbers. Some 4.3 million workers have vanished. Between the Dems' promised social welfare and the belief another job will be easy to find, this represents optimism. 5. Morgan Stanley makes big money advising on mergers. Mergers are a positive mood phenomenon reflecting inclusion. 6. Demand for the junkiest bonds, collateralized loan obligations, CLOs, is at record levels, with $131 billion sold this year. This is typical of a market top mood. Think September 1987 or March 2000 or fall 2007. In fact, the previous list is a warning not assuring signal. I am preparing a presentation on how Credit Suisse lost over $5 billion this year on a single customer, Bill Huang. How many more Bill Huangs are out there, I wonder? And the price patterns look eerily like 1987. Despite the current rally, the indexes are not at new highs, and the transports do not confirm even the recent highs. Exercise caution amid these warning signs. Hello, this is Cindy, reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, October 16th. UTPB Professor Plans 80s Course by Ruth Campbell. Mix a little bit of MTV with a dash of Reagan and the Cold War, and you'll have a sampling of University of Texas Permian Basin History Professor Derek Katzum's course on the 1980s will likely include. Katzum, who is the UTPB Kathleen Cosper Dunnigan Professor of the Humanities and Senior Research Associate and Visiting Professor, 2019, at Rhodes University in Grahamstown, South Africa, said the course will start in January. He's working on the details now, but every class will probably start with an MTV video. Katzum wasn't ready to teach a course talking about Obama and Trump, and the 1960s doesn't seem to have as much appeal anymore. But he thinks more and more millennials and Gen Z people are fans of the 80s. He thought maybe this generation would be fans of the 80s because a lot of their parents would be children of that decade. Katzum was a teenager in the 80s, and this also will allow him to think historically about a period that he felt he knows a lot about, but that he needs to think more critically of. A lot of it'll be a chronological political overview, but then most of it will be layering in popular culture and the things that make the 80s. The 80s are less about Ronald Reagan and Star Wars and Iran-Contra, and more about MTV and Greed is Good and Alex P. Keaton, and the kinds of things that people were experiencing in the 1980s. So the 80s are as much about Madonna as they are about Margaret Thatcher, in a lot of ways, he said. I'm going to try to strike that balance of here's Cindy Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun video, and then possibly the subtext of Material Girl. He added that there is a reason that song came out when it did and was so popular and resonant. This whole idea of material culture being this sort of be-all and end-all, but then there will also be elements of the way Americans were conceptualizing their own recent past. The Vietnam syndrome being so big in the 1980s. You have the first Rambo movie, which is the disenchanted Vietnam vet, coming to this town in Oregon and being treated miserably, but then the next Rambo movie, just a few years later, is like Rambo going back and single-handedly redeeming the American experience in the Vietnam War, Katzum said. Along with President Reagan, he may include President George H.W. Bush, President Carter, and Bill Clinton's election. The course is planned for a January start. I've been thinking about it over the summer and into the early fall. I thought about doing a course on the 90s. A lot of the time, I'll pick a course based on what new and interesting work is being done on that period. There's some really interesting stuff that I think will be readable for students, Katzum said. He'll also try to run the gamut of videos such as Video Killed the Radio Star and Fight the Power, and cover AIDS, the moral majority, and abortion. So I'm going to try to capture the decade and all of its kaleidoscope glory, all of its day-glow colors, he said. He probably won't include Friday Night Lights. The one thing I've discovered from students here is they're actually kind of sick of Friday Night Lights, Katzum said. Early on, when he taught a sports class, the students were sort of disinterested because they all knew about it and they lived it. Movies such as The Breakfast Club are likely going to be part of the course. Along with the 80s course, Katzum has a book out based on an event from 1981 called Flashpoint, subtitled How a Little-Known Sporting Event Fueled America's Anti-Apartheid Movement. The summary on the back of the book tells the story of Springbok's 1981 U.S. Rugby Tour and its impact on the American anti-apartheid movement. The U.S. lagged well behind the rest of the Western world when it came to addressing the vexing question of South Africa's racial polities, and Katzam shows how the tour helped to change that. Professors met the South African team at airports, chanted outside their hotels, and courted arrests at matches, even while event organizers went to incredible lengths to keep the team's location secret, the Dust Jacket says. Katzam said this may be why he has been thinking about the 80s in a different way. He first played rugby at Rhodes in 1997. He had never seen a match before. The first rugby game I ever saw live was starting at wing for Rhodes University, and within 25 seconds of my first game, I have the ball out in the wing. And within 7 seconds after having the ball out of the wing, I'm a sprawled-out wreck on the pitch. It was sort of a love affair. But I also saw some things even at my liberal, theoretically anti-apartheid university in the first year after apartheid that, he said, he didn't necessarily always have the most progressive teammates. Then he heard the story about the Springbok tour and thought it was a good book topic. The publisher wasn't too sure, but they gave him a 2-book contract. Next, he'll be writing about sports and politics that's due in 2022. He wrote the vast majority of Flashpoint in the fall semester of last year. Katzam said the pre-publication reviews have been good from mainstays like Publishers Weekly and Booklist. Flashpoint is available online. This is his 4th book. It's always exciting when a book comes out, Katzam said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, October 18th. Leading the Way, Helping People Key for New OC Program Director. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. As someone with a military and medical background, Ben White likes leading and seeing people get that light of understanding in their eyes. White went to Concord Career College and then earned an associate degree in general studies from Odessa College. Ultimately, he wants to earn a master's degree, but for now, he is devoting himself to his job as the CST program director in the Surgical Technology Program at Odessa College. CST stands for Certified Surgical Technologist. Before that, he was a medic in the U.S. Army and did 2 tours in Iraq. He joined at 18 in 2006, wanting to get out of the house, be independent, and do his part. White scored high enough on the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, or ASVAB test, to get any job he wanted. He said he'd always been interested in the medical field, with his mother being a nurse and his sister a nurse practitioner. Quote, "I've always enjoyed helping people and being part of the good aspect of the world," he said. In Iraq, he ran a clinic and set up field clinics where they worked with Iraqi nationals. Quote, "We'd help treat in the local population there. A lot of times they don't have access to that health care, and it was real eye-opening to kind of see those things, and it's a real learning environment," White said. He was in the Army for 4 years and was discharged as a specialist promotable. That meant he was ready to be promoted to sergeant, but he decided to start his next chapter. Students earn a 2-year associate's degree. They take all their prerequisites the first year, and the second year is solely surgical technology. It used to be a certificate, he said. Quote, "Surgical technology is an evolving field where we set up and assist the surgeons with their surgeries. We do pretty much every specialty there is. We're the ones responsible for maintaining the sterility of it and setting up the actual surgery itself so the surgeons can perform it," White said. The profession used to be called perioperative nurses. As the field developed, it became more specialized and it took more training to do it, so the CST job was developed. Now, most of the time, nurses are in the circulator role. Quote, a lot of people have moved toward the CST role, mainly because this is what we do. We're trained. We come in. We know our instruments. We're learning about this, specifically the anatomy and physiology, the types of surgeries, and we're specialized, so it's more of our area where nursing. You're taking such a broad aspect of medicine, and you specialize later in your field. Normally, there will be what you call CNORs, Certified Operating Nurse, and that's where they're going to specialize, and they can scrub in, White said. OC brought back its surgical technology program in 2015, but it was accredited in 2017. White said Texas now requires you to graduate from an accredited program. Quote, and then you go and take your CST, and you're supposed to be licensed or certified to work, White said. Students are tested on a national level, so they are nationally certified and can work in any of the 50 United States without having to retest. White said you do have to refresh on the specific laws for a state. Quote, we have a standardized skill set that we're so proficient in that you can transfer from state to state and be just fine. They have travel and tech jobs all over the place. I get called all the time, but I'd like being here, he said. There are 9 in the program currently. They are able to take 10 and run 2 cohorts a year and 2 instructors. The number of students is based in part on the number of clinical spots in the area that are available and how many they think they can accommodate through their accrediting body. They have students conduct peer evaluations because they are maintaining the sterility of the case in the OR, so they need to be able to identify when someone contaminates something or makes a mistake and be able to call it. Quote, that's part of the curriculum where we're watching and we're going off what we do with each other, White said. He added that they are a tight-knit group that looks out for each other. Quote, it's not one of those programs where we're going to overload with students just to get more and pass it. We want to be able to teach and have successful employees go out into the workforce. With this program, we're taking the aspects of surgical technology professionalism. We're taking these young adults and molding them to be professionals in the workplace, so once they hit the door of their new hospital that they're working at, or surgical center, they're ready to start. And ideally, once people hear that Tech came from Odessa College, they're just going to hire him on the spot, White said. He added that there is a strong demand for surgical technologists. Quote, I think they see the field growing 20-25% annually just because there are more people needing surgery and they're expanding it, White said. He added that Midland Memorial hired everyone from a class last year. People don't necessarily know that the surgical technologist field exists. Quote, it's a great field to work in, he said. White said he was asked to try teaching and precepting. He had the experience of being in the Army and training soldiers, plus working at Odessa Regional Medical Center and Midland Memorial Hospital. He was the lead surgical technologist at ORMC, where he worked in labor and delivery. Asked if he might want to go back to working at hospitals, White said he enjoys what he's doing now. Quote, I love Odessa College. I love the environment, the people. It's very welcoming. They're very supportive in really getting the students their education, and it makes it easier for me to do my job with all the support. That's something you don't get everywhere. I'm not sure I want to let that go, White said. Students use all types of state-of-the-art technology to simulate what it's like to perform procedures, and they also handle and sterilize instruments to prepare to go into an operating room. Quote, This cohort is getting a step up on pretty much any of the programs in the nation because we have better technology. We have a lab simulator where they can actually see what it's like to work a camera in a laparotic simulation before they go to the clinical side, so their learning curve is dramatically decreased and they're going to be able to get that firsthand experience. Most of the hospitals that I've talked to are excited and encouraged about that, and they're working with the doctors to let them do this stuff more and sooner so that they can get their cases down and really have that impact as a student versus wait for them to get out, White said. When he graduated in 2013, they didn't have anything like the equipment and facilities at OC. Quote, "We're really kind of bridging the gap between the community and the doctors. With this capability, with the technology that we have here, we're able to branch out with other fields and PAs and let them train on it," White said. Luis Madrid and Edith Heredia are both students in the program. Madrid's love of anatomy drew him in. He said it brings him the joy and satisfaction of helping others. Heredia started as a certified nursing assistant. Quote, "I think all those roles are important, but I wanted to do some more. I had learned about the program through my school email, and it just seemed really interesting being able to be part of helping others," Heredia added. Madrid and Heredia said the program is tough and there is a lot of time management involved. Quote, "It's one of the things we preach is time management," White said. "We're lucky that these two are always coming in extra on their own time, asking questions. We'll open the lab up and go work stuff with them. That way they're able to get that extra practice if they want to," end quote. Heredia said they appreciate that White is able to stay late to help them learn. Their clinicals start at the end of October. Madrid said they are nervous about starting them, but it's nothing they can't tackle. Quote, "It's exciting to finally get to step into the hospital, something that you've been, like, waiting for. I've been waiting 4 years. It's a long journey," Madrid said. He added that he had wanted to be a nurse, but he wanted to be more hands-on and see actual surgeries. Quote, "And I learned about the program, and I decided I needed a little bit more prereqs for this program, and I decided to go ahead and apply. I found out that it's very competitive. There are only 10 spots," Madrid said. Heredia said they have to keep their grades up in anatomy and physiology. Quote, "When we do our selection process, we base it on their grades and interview, see what their interests are, their ability to dedicate themselves to it, because it is something that requires a lot of time and effort. It's not something you can just kind of skate through," White said. He added that they go over their medical terminology and break the words down. Quote, "I'm very lucky to have a good cohort going through," White said.
Colonoscopy is a valid test for 70-year-old. "Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 70-year-old man in good health. I've had regular colonoscopy since my 50s, but I wonder about the wisdom of a colonoscopy at my age. My doctor has sent repeated requests for me to schedule the procedure. Is this a valid exam at my age, or is the clinic taking advantage of my excellent medical insurance?" Answer: the guidelines and the clinical studies are clear. Screening for colon cancer saves lives. A colonoscopy and other screening tests, or other screening test, is recommended beginning at age 45 and continuing on average until age 75, so long as a person is in good health. Some people want to continue colon cancer screening even after 75, but there are no good studies to support use after age 75. I would not recommend a test past age 85, since the benefits are lower and the risks are higher in patients who are that old. Although there are, unfortunately, exceptions, I really believe most doctors recommend treatments to help their patients, not enrich themselves. Our code of ethics instructs us to put our patients' needs above our own. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Couple struggles with elderly cat's declining health. Dear Abby, My wife and I have been together 39 years, and we generally get along very well. We've always had dogs and cats, and we currently have two of each. While my wife loves all animals, I'm a dog person. I don't dislike cats, but I don't really care for them. The cats and I tend to ignore each other. We have one who's 20 years old. While he doesn't appear to be in any pain, I suspect he has dementia. He has poor balance, he stumbles into walls and cabinets, and has fallen down the stairs a number of times. Recently, he's been peeing in my den and garage. That I can't ignore. I think it's time to put the cat down. My wife is calling me cold and heartless. I think when I've lost my mind enough to pee in my den or garage, I hope someone will be compassionate enough to help me go. I'm starting to hate that cat. Signed, Favors Dogs in El Paso. Dear Favors Dogs, that poor animal should be examined by a veterinarian to determine why he's stumbling and falling and whether the problem can be remedied. The elderly dog of a friend of mine kept running into things and ultimately had successful cataract surgery. As to the cat's inappropriate choice for a place to relieve himself, the problem may be as simple as a curable bladder infection. Unless he has picked up on the fact that you would like to see him dead and is doing it to get back at you. Dear Abby, my boyfriend Tom and I just spent the weekend with his older brother George. George spent most of the weekend mocking and mimicking me, and he even made fun of my chronic health condition. Tom kept telling me not to be so sensitive and to ignore George's sense of humor. Afterward, I told Tom I wouldn't remain silent in the future, and I wished he had said something like, "That's enough, George," on my behalf. Tom insists it isn't his place. He thinks I should accept George as he is, since we all have our faults. While I want to maintain my relationship with Tom, I need to limit my exposure to George, whose behavior I regard as abusive. Does this seem reasonable? Tired of teasing. You're tired. Reasonable, yes. Whether it's possible may be questionable. I agree that George's behavior was abusive. It's a shame Tom was afraid to stand up to his older brother, but because he wouldn't intervene, you would have been within your rights to stand up for yourself. Tell him his ridicule wasn't funny and leave. Dear Abby, I am 48 and married to a widower in his early 60s. Not long ago, we moved into a 55-plus community. The problem is, every time we meet someone, they ask my husband why he robbed the cradle. I'm sick of hearing it. My husband is a warm, caring, loving man who just laughs and says, "Yep." How can I rebut those comments when they come because my husband doesn't seem to be able? He wants everyone to like him, so he never makes waves. Signed, Not From the Cradle. Dear Not From the Cradle, the comments aren't meant as an attack on your marriage. The next time someone says it, pipe up with, "We're both old enough to know what we wanted."
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.